Generosity. Generosity.
Generosity.
Yeah, generosity.
Generosity.
Mm-hmm. It touches the deepest strata of our being. Because whenever we have to deal with our sense of property or our stuff, sometimes we become a little touchy. I know I never really liked my sister to borrow any of my clothes. I'm sure none of you have had that problem with a sibling.
No.
But I did, because I would usually find them wadded up on the floor in her room, because I didn't like sharing my clothes with my sister, because I didn't think she took care of them the way they should have been taken care of, right?
Right.
I mean, I had a protocol, and she didn't follow it. But in the same token, if she needed me, I was there. Hopefully she'd have on something that was hers and not mine, but I would be there. I would get her out of the ditch. I wouldn't ask why she was in the ditch. I would get her out of the ditch. We all know people like that, right?
Right.
Right? That's who you're going to call when you're in a ditch, either literally or, you know, figuratively. Now, some people you'll call, say, get me out of the ditch, and you're standing there in the ditch, and they're asking you, well, why are you in the ditch? How did you get there? What made you think that would be a good idea? Are those the people you're going to call to get you out of the ditch? Exactly. Probably not. And we learn these things with experience, right? So our stuff, our possessions, the things we accumulate, why is it so difficult for us to give to someone else what is really dear to us or what could be useful to us? Why is it so hard and difficult to give it to someone else, to let go of it, to not put strings attached, you know, like, well, that needs to be on a velvet hanger, not a metal hanger, when you finish wearing my shirt. Joanne, that's my sister. I think it's because not only will we miss the thing, I think it's because we fear a certain loss, an irreversible loss. Not with borrowing a shirt, obviously, but we are losing a part of ourselves. It's kind of like a little bit of dying. But to be generous means to conquer these fears. It also means, I think, really more importantly, to redefine our boundaries. And for the generous person, boundaries and borders are permeable. What is yours, your suffering, your problems, is also mine. This is compassion. Remember when we were first introduced to the prophets way back when, many Sundays ago, and we talked about how the sense was that if we did something wrong or harmed each other, we were harming or doing something wrong to God. And God felt that. So what is yours? Your suffering, your problems, your joy is also mine. And what is mine, my possessions, my body, my knowledge, my abilities, my time, my resources, my energy, well, it's also yours. This is generosity. But there's also no use denying it. Even the most relaxed and cheerful person in the world, in her innermost being, is still attached to her possessions. And these emotional muscles are very taut. They can be tense. What is ours, we believe is ours, and we hold tight. Whether it's to another person, a social position, an object, whatever we think brings us security. And in this holding, there is fear and self-importance. That's probably redundant, but fear and self-importance. We're like children in an ancient Eastern parable who have built sandcastles on the beach. I love building sandcastles on the beach. Each has his castle. Each has her territory, right? Don't get your castle over in my space, right? And all the kids that are building them, they feel important. It's mine. No, it's mine. No, it's mine. Remember the seagulls in, was that Finding Nemo? Mine, mine, mine. Yes. So the kids do that on the beach when they're making their sandcastles. They might even get into a little, fights. They might even make pretend war. Then the evening comes and they go home and they forget about their sandcastles and they go to sleep. And what happens while they're asleep? The tide. The tide comes in or out, I'm not sure, and erases, obliterates their creation. I think our most precious belongings are like sandcastles. We build them, we put barriers around them. We say, they're mine, they're mine, they're mine. And then they disappear. Do we really want to take ourselves so seriously? No. I think what generosity does is it loosens our grip on possessions and allows us to let go. And true generosity is guided by awareness. It gives people what they really need for the next step forward, which might simply be survival. Did you know that the West Texas Food Bank is in crisis right now? Yes. They are out of and continually out of infant formula. And the federal workers who are furloughed, can you imagine not being able to purchase infant formula? So during the month of November, we are going to collect infant formula. Just be sure when you look at the can or for the powdered formula that it is WIC approved, and that'll be a good brand. And if you need help with that, just let me know. Survival. Or maybe the next step forward is learning. Or maybe it's developing an interest. Or maybe it's healing. Or finding employment. Or expressing a talent. It's a giving that isn't dictated by a sense of guilt. Or by a debt. Or by wanting to create dependence. Or to show off. It's truly a free gift, which in turn generates freedom. And this is kindness at its best. Now, generosity isn't limited to tangible things, material possessions, but with also our spiritual qualities. Above all, you can be generous with yourself. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. I mean, this is a more subtle form of generosity. And all of us have resources of which we are sometimes not even aware. We have ideas, we have images, we have experiences, and we have memories. At times, we are too ready to participate in other people's affairs, and we give advice and proclaim our ideas. But often, we don't show what makes our heart sing. We keep these experiences to ourselves and communicate only, you know, the easy stuff, the on-the-surface stuff. But it's through sharing of our inner life, of the richest and most fertile part of ourselves, that relationships grow. And they grow rich. And they're so enjoyable. I think relationships are defined by how much of ourselves we communicate. And we can be generous with work as well. You know, we can do just enough in our job, no extras. You know, like a student with a pass-fail class, and they do just enough to pass that class, right? Or else we can give more. I was struck once, and I've seen it many times, and maybe it's a policy now, but way back in the day before eggs were $50 bazillion for six, I was at a grocery store. And I was back when I used to go to the grocery store. Yeah. And I noticed the person in front of me was getting eggs, and the cashier opened the box of eggs. I'm like, what's she doing? She was making sure that none of the eggs were broken. Or damaged, or looked funny. Now, at that time, no one had asked her to do that. She did that. She wanted to be sure they were okay. And what about the mechanic who helps fix your car on his day off? Or what about someone in a store that tells you, we don't have this here, but they may have it over there, and they point you to one of their competitors? How about the teacher? God love our teachers. Who takes the time to give you useful guidance, even though she isn't required to do so. The teacher who listens to you, who values you as a person. Or how about the physician who doesn't just get out the script pad and say, okay, I'll prescribe yada, 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 and you're like, well, I can't tell what you prescribe because it looks like you're writing in Latin. But they deal with your whole person. They want to know what's going on. What's going on with the grandkids? How are you doing? You know, how's retirement going for you? These are all people who give more than they are required to give. They are generous. Now, it seems kind of offensive to speak about the benefits of generosity, right? Generosity is by definition disinterested. And why should we talk of gain when being generous is a perfect end of itself? Well, I think we do need to talk about, only to understand the subject more fully. It's useful to know that generosity is correlated with self-esteem. Those who have high self-esteem tend to be generous, and vice versa. By being more generous, they gain self-esteem. We know, too, that happier people tend to be more generous. If we are feeling content, we are likely to be kinder to others. Someone who is gratified is more apt to feel generous and to help another in difficulty. But the converse is also true. If you are generous, you are more likely to be happy. Generosity is a mood lifter. Mother Teresa said to someone who noted the happy and cheerful atmosphere among her team helpers, she said, "Nothing makes you happier than to help someone who is unwell." We also know as a documented fact that poorer people, and I mean poorer proportionally to their income, give more to charity than richer people. It seems that having little money keeps them more in touch with the values that count, or perhaps it helps them understand the discomfort of lacking what is vital. Or maybe it's because the pain of need keeps alight the flames of compassion. We don't know exactly, and many poor people donate more money to charity for all these reasons. I think I've told this story before, but it's such a good story, I'm going to tell it again. After 9/11, the terrorist attack on 9/11, I mean, most of us knew right within a matter of minutes that it happened. But some people heard about it much later. There was a tribe in South Kenya, in an area remote from any kind of technology. They did not have Wi-Fi. They did not have cell phones. They did not have internet. They didn't have any of that. So they learned about the attack 7 or 8 months later. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how these people who weren't in the least bit acquainted with our world imagine it to be and what they understood about the catastrophe, but they realized a tragedy had occurred. And dressed in their beautiful multicolored garments, they held a solemn meeting and decided that they would send their most precious possession, 16 cows, to the people of New York to help them in this difficult moment. These people in Kenya had known torment, they had known hunger, and they were now ready to give up their source of food to show their solidarity to other human beings they had never, ever met, and probably never ever would. You know, we ask the question of what is the relationship between faith and reward, virtue and wealth. What do we get in return? Bob, could you put up the gospel lesson? The problem isn't wealth per se, but our attitude towards it. And as we accumulate riches, we are tempted to trust in our possessions and our powers to acquire them rather than in God. And you can see that in the difference between the two men in the gospel reading. Boy, I'm glad I'm not like that other person. Right? I'm glad I'm not like them. Go to the next slide. Thank you. And names all those other people. And then what do? They list all the great things that they have done, right? Well, I fast. I give a tenth of all my income. And the tax collector, the person that has thrown their lot literally in with the oppressed authority that goes around collecting taxes, what does he do? He beats his chest and says, "Oh, please be merciful to me. Be merciful to me." I'm sure that the other man, the Pharisee, that he probably honestly acquired his wealth and was probably generous with it, but it also evidently led to pride. And this is why it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. One out of seven verses in the gospel, Christ talks about money. Because it can be such a stumbling block. Coming up, we have this one of my favorite stories in the gospels, and that's the story of Zacchaeus. Or as we say here, Zacchaeus. And I just love that story, maybe because I'm short too, I don't know. But when he says, I'm going to give half of all I have to the hungry and the ones I've cheated, and you can bet everybody's poking everybody else in the rib. Oh, we know. I know he cheated Fred. Uh-huh. And Wilma over here, well, yeah, he took all her money. He says, I'll pay it back four times. We don't know whether he did that or not. I bet he did. Because Jesus came and had dinner with him. When you break bread with somebody, there's a bond. Frederick Buechner reminds us that faith is a verb. Not a noun. It's a process, not a possession. Faith is something you live out. Because faith doesn't free us from, but rather for Christian actions. And one of those actions is generosity, is giving. Is sharing. Faith in God doesn't consist in asserting God's existence. Sometimes we think that's what it's all about. But rather, it's about acting on God's behalf. And that's what we do with our generosity. We act on God's behalf. The generosity that we are called to give as followers of Christ is exactly this, to give that which is dearest to us, because giving is a transformational act, an act that demonstrates God's claim on us, because God calls us God's beloved. That gives us riches that are, you can't even measure those, and value. So there's nothing that can add or take away from that. God's given it all to us. We are God's beloved. And our possessions, our lack of possessions, they don't mean anything in the eyes of God. Other than the opportunity for faith in action, for generosity on behalf of God, to loving our neighbor as God loves us, and as we share that love with others, including ourselves. Generosity. Generosity. Let's do it. Say it together. Generosity. Thanks be to God.